Welcome to Agile After Dark, the podcast that addresses agile topics not talked about in the light of day. I'm Brandon Gartley.
And I'm Greg Adams Woodford.
And I am Jessica Gustlies.
And on today's show, we dive into the hottest thing since Greg's TikTok dance challenge, objectives and key results, or as they are more well known, OKRs. I've been trying to do that dance for like weeks now, Greg. I just can't.
It's a talent. You know, can't, not just anybody can do it.
That's right. Well, on our last podcast about bridging the gap between business and IT, it wasn't a dance that you did, Greg, but it was actually something you said that I thought was really apropos for this session, and I'll do it in quotes. Here's what I think the product people fail is they don't invest the time to explain to the developers what the business objective or goal is, because you're asking them to solve a problem, they have to understand the context.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of one of our bigger problem statements, kind of building off of the last podcast we did. And wanted to not spend too much time on, hey, what are OKRs? Yeah, because there's a lot of other resources out there and so forth, but did want to give a little bit of a context around kind of where they came from, the basic constructs, and then really get into, you know, why are they so like super popular right now? What are we seeing the challenges being around them? And then what can help make it better?
Yeah, and Brandon, one thing I would say is that John Doerr book, what's it called? Measure What Matters, I think is what it's called.
Yep.
That's a great book that just lays it out with real world examples. So that's...
Yeah, it's this one.
Yeah,
he's that's good, which is a good segue into the kind of the history behind it, because the OKRs were really popularized by this guy named Andy Grove at Intel in the 1970s. All great things were made in the 70s. and he kind of introduced the idea to help the company focus on like their key priorities and measuring progress. But it was Doerr who actually worked with Grove at Intel and became a venture capitalist. He really leaned on the OKRs to introduce them to Google in 1999, when Google was just like still in the garage, basically. When those two guys were in the garage, he kind of introduced this concept to them. And it's really the popularity of how well it did for Google that really made it take off. And it's used at, you know, a lot of the prominent tech companies like LinkedIn, Twitter, now known as X, I hate saying that, and Spotify. They've all really adopted it at a full extent. And what, you know, at a basic level, you know, they're really supposed to be more about outcomes versus outputs, which is, you know, a common theme that we have said in many, many podcasts in the past in terms of where we're trying to get people to go. And the objectives are really meant to be the why. The key results are meant to be the what. And the actions the teams take to then meet those are really the how. And one thing we can kind of get into is Doerr really kind of believes in it being more like a hierarchical, you know, thing where it's like throughout the organization from like the very top, tippity top, all the way down to the individual. And we can kind of talk about what we've seen there and what I've seen work and not work. But the objectives are really kind of the high level qualitative goals that the org, the team or the individual is trying to achieve, again, in that hierarchy. And they're really meant to be more ambitious and inspirational. And there's a lot of different opinions that I've run into about how to write them. So this is where it starts to get in a little bit of a gray area, right?
Yeah,
so for objectives, they can be like really just like make everything great. Like that's the level. What I try to do, and you know, to jump the gun a little bit, is I try to make it kind of a combination of the action plus what plus why, so that they get at least the practice of, you know, how they're trying to write it. So example might be, you know, enhance user experience to increase user satisfaction and engagement, right? You kind of have the to statement on the end, and the enhance is like something that we're trying to like the action, right? A lot of times it could just be like improve user experience,
make it
better, right? And that's really not inspirational, right? And I like to try to get them to do the two to start, when they're first starting to write them to kind of get them to start thinking about that. I was like, what's the real reason we're doing this rather than it's just like some over hierarchical goal.
And then, I think you point, Brandon, it's really about the why. A lot of it is about the why. And it's trying to avoid the activity trap, I think is what they call it, where people are doing things. They're very busy, but they're not connected to value. So why are they doing them? Right.
Yeah. And that's where go ahead, Jess, please.
And not tied to the company's overall, like, here's where we're headed. I think there's, it's a ladder up, right, to the vision and the mission, where we want to go as an organization, or that's what it's intended to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a really, really important piece of this. And this is where, I think even Jess, when you and I were still working together, we were kind of really getting into how do we help our leadership define their visions and missions, right? You know, and having different workshops that we did with them. And this just directly is, this is part of that hierarchy, like as that Dor kind of explains, is like, whatever the vision is for like that 5 years down the road, the OKRs are kind of almost like your landmarks along the way, right? And we could talk about the difference between OKRs and KPIs, but I saw a great illustration of like the OKRs, like the landmarks along the way, and the KPIs, if you're in a car, it's more like your gauges, you know, how fast are you going? How much gas do you have? Versus kind of, you know, what are the major things you need to get along the way? But really quick, the key results are kind of the subset of those objectives. And there are specific measurable outcomes that are meant to, you know, indicate progress towards achieving the objective. And the key thing there that I keep coaching people on is that it needs to be quantifiable, achievable, and time bound. Now, the time bound, I don't always make them put it on there because typically we say, hey, we want to keep this within a quarter, right? Is what my normal time base is. But it's like, so if you're going to use like that user experience one, it'd be something like increase average user satisfaction score from 3.5 to 4.5 out of 5 or something like that, right? It would be very specific along a scale. We're trying to move it. What I try to talk to the people about that I work with, so it's like a lot, the temptation is to make things very binary. It's like, we did this. So now we met the objective. Okay, but what is that actually? You know, have you moved the scale? Is it on a scale? Is it, you know, improving thing anyway? There are times where, you know, just binary is naturally makes sense, particularly when you're starting, because you kind of have to set the metrics up in a way. But
I'm trying to answer the question, how do we know? Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know, what if we don't have a user satisfaction score? We need to set up one, right?
And how are we going to know? That's what that is pointing at.
Yeah. So that's kind of the basics at a very high level. I will say that I did do a little bit of my nerd research. And Mooncamp, which is one of the many OKR software companies, is out there now. And we can talk about that as well as we kind of get into some of the solutioning. They have an annual OKR impact report. And of the people that they surveyed, 83% of them agree that OKRs have had a really positive impact on their organization, which I wish Agile would get scores that high, to be honest with you. But it's not always the case.
I'm surprised by that number. And kind of when I let it sink in and think about it, is it that it does, to your point, kind of move the needle towards what is it that we're trying to achieve? Like, it's again, outputs versus outcomes, right? It moves the needle towards outcomes and that shift in thinking. And so I could see why that's such a positive. I'm probably going to be a little bit of the Debbie Downer on the OKR episode. Because I've
got she's moving into your territory. Watch
out. I was going to say
feelings about it. But I can see why that the number says it has had a positive impact, because again, provided context to people who are building the thing and getting a better sense of where are we headed, why are we headed there, and what are we hoping to accomplish. Man, that feels good. Like, even if they're badly written or become something that we're not quite hoping that they are, I could see why that would have a positive impact. So while surprised by it, I think that's cool. Neat.
Well, I think the hard part about it is if you don't have buy-in and direction from senior leadership on, you know, the overall vision and value that you're providing the customer, if you don't have buy-in, you're never going to make this work, because the data is going to go nowhere And then you're just spending a lot of time on something that nobody's actually looking at, right? I mean, it's just like, you know, so it's kind of like the, what are the outcomes versus the outputs thing.
Yeah.
I always just go back and look at it.
Yeah, I know, right? Which gets us to like the first section after that brief introduction. Thank you for your patience as I try to go through that, everyone. But, you know, why is this so hot? Why is Greg say, why is it slap?
That's what I say. That's right.
I love the
My kids think I'm so hip. My kids think I'm so hip because I know everything before they do. So they never have to explain anything to me about when they say things or when
I said to God the other day, he's like, oh, that's fire. He's like, what? That's so old, man. Like, are you aging?
I mean, just look at me.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, why is it? I mean, I'd be curious from your guys' standpoint. I've done enough talking already. I mean, why do you guys think it's such like a hot commodity these days?
Well, I like the first question in terms of why is it so hot, and I'd love to hear Greg's answer. Like, what caused the need, in your opinion?
Well, I think that there'd been a lack of measurement, and you know, people were doing these red, yellow, green, you know. And I got in trouble a lot for being against those things because it's like, what does it mean? Everything is always red. Like, it's like, it's so arbitrary. So I think
we're positioning it all as green. It's red under the covers, but we cover it with a green cloth.
But you don't know what you don't know. So it's always really red. So it's a lie. Right. And I said that and then got kicked off a project once because I said that out in front of everybody. So including the CEO, so that wasn't good, or the president or whatever. So, but it's true. It's I think people realize that doesn't really work because it's not giving you any real true measure. And so I think that's why people are looking, you know, KPIs was the big thing, right? For a long time. So KPIs were the thing. And then the OKR became, because it's more sophisticated, but you know, it's I think people are looking for real data to see where are we, as opposed to just the generic kind of, you know, blanket red, yellow, green.
Yeah, Greg, but your question or the comment you made in the last podcast kind of was something I was wondering, you know, in terms of, we talked about the chasm that exists between business and IT. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that, when I'm having those conversations with my clients, I'm like, yeah, we have, you know, we just can't seem to really get through to the business. I'm like, well, because you're trying to tell them KPIs about uptime and, you know, things that they don't, you know, you're basically trying to stay within a band of acceptability in terms of, you know, we haven't had any big spikes one way or the other that are not good, right? We basically have stayed in the safe band and you're reporting that to them. And you might as well be telling them traffic colors, right?
Right. What does that mean? The problem is that, so let's say that, you know, having uptime being 99.9% or whatever is really important, but what's the value? How do you translate that to the customer? So that's where the gap is, right? So because everything you do should have value, and sometimes you'll go off track because you don't know and you experiment, you know, and you come back. But I think you always have to go back to value. Are you adding value? And one way to measure that is through one way. Just, you know, there's a lot of ways, but one way is through OKRs, you know?
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts, Jess?
No, I understand what I think what Greg's saying and pulling in the business and again, the providing of context. I mean, we've had a number of conversations about, great, you're asking me to build this thing. I'm going to build it the way that I think I'm going to build it because I don't understand the bigger picture of what I'm trying to build. And I think that having that context helps me as an individual on a team make better day in, day out decisions. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And like I'm actually tied to something larger than myself, even larger than my team, larger than, you know, this group of teams, gives me a sense of purpose and a reason to come into work every day and to do the things that I'm doing. I'm not a widget builder. I'm accomplishing this objective collectively with another group of people. As human beings, we want that. And I think that's important.
I do too. And I think I might have said it last week, you know, developers are actually the ones who get the work done. They're actually making decisions about implementation. And the business is there to define what the goals are based on value, hopefully, although it doesn't happen as nearly as much as it should. But if every developer is making, you know, 5 decisions a week or 10 decisions a week times 3-4 weeks, they're making decisions. And if they don't have the context and don't understand the value, they can make 40 bad decisions, or they can make 40 good decisions. Like, but they, if they don't understand the context, how are they able to make decisions as opposed to just being a widget builder?
And I would add on to that, and I think Jess was getting this a little bit. It's not even like, hey, I need to be able to make decisions. It's like I feel connected,
yeah,
to what, because, you know, but back in the old days where we worked in office buildings all the time, you know, you'd walk, you know, down the halls, and you know, typically near the elevators, they would have, this is our vision for our organization, right? And it would like be this really nice text and imagery and stuff like that
on the walls.
And people will walk by it every day, and if you ask them, what's the vision of the company?
Make more.
Trying to make these widgets that will sell to people. Mm-hmm. Right?
I don't even think it gets to the point of selling to people, because I don't think developers think about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they
don't.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not saying they should spend a lot of time thinking about it, but really, again, what is their value? Like what Jess was saying, why do I come into work every day? Like, am I just working at a factory? You know, that's a different thing, right? And that's one of the things, one of the companies I worked at was when we were talking about product management and value, and you're in operations and you're like, well, I know what my KPR or my OKR or whatever is, the thing got in the box and it got shipped. I'm good. That's all the measurement I need, right? But output. When you're in software, it's a lot different. Yep. But if it's software, it's a lot different, you know? So it's also, you have to make
a lot more complicated, a lot more decisions, a lot more different ways of doing things, especially as technology continues to get more and more complex and more fast paced. And what I like about what you just said is there's something, so yes, connected to the overarching and the something larger, but because we have so many day in, day out decisions to make, it also gives us a lot of focus. So if I'm working towards this objective, I could either polish the ever living shit out of this one part that I'm doing. I'm going to gold plate it and make it just absolutely the best thing you possibly make, and also probably make it confusing because I've got a different way of thinking about how easy this would be than other people. Or I could go just enough, good enough on this thing because there are other things that are going to help me, help us as collectively accomplish this objective. And so it gives us like hyper focus on what we're trying to do, which gives me the ability to make those day in and day out decisions. Do I keep polishing this thing, or is it good enough and I can pick up the next thing that's going to accomplish that objective? So there's a lot, like there's elements of focus and commitment that are involved in OKRs as well.
Yeah, true. And I think you need to explain goal plating to Brandon, because he doesn't really understand the concept and he's never ever harped on it for months at a time ever.
And we never get anything gold plated from Brandon, I will tell you that.
No, you certainly don't. Definitely not. Definitely not. Unless it's like the best nachos in town, then I got you. I got you. It's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we're sounding, it's like, okay, yeah, I kind of get it and so forth. But I wonder, can it really solve some of the issues that the other metrics that have been used, and maybe not even metrics, communication, transparency. It's not even just, so I want to kind of get beyond like, hey, OKR is a metrics thing. I think it's meant to be more. I think the people that prophesize it say that it is more than that, right? You know, what is it? What do you think it's trying to do more than others? And maybe it's not. Yes, Jess.
Okay, so here's where you're going to get my Debbie Downer-ness.
Yes, I was hoping. Yes.
I'm going to answer the previous question before that. Why are so many companies adopting it? Because everyone else is. It's this to me has such similar flavors of agile, agility, Scrum, name the thing that we've been talking about. it's because Google's doing it, so we got to do it. Or Facebook's doing it, so we got to do it. So then all of a sudden, now we're all, we got to do it. Whatever the thing is, we got to do. And they grab onto it, and then they try to start to attempt to do it. So why are so many companies adopting it? Because everybody else is. It's the same answer that we had for agility for a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you this quote. I'm stealing this, but it's been used in a number of different ways. But I'm sorry, OKRs is like teenage sex. Everyone talks about it. Nobody knows how to do it. Everybody thinks everyone else is doing it. So everybody claims they're doing it, and nobody's doing it well.
I never thought about
that's,
that.
That's non-gold-plated analysis right there.
Well, everybody else is doing it, so yeah, totally doing it. We're definitely doing OKRs, and we're super good at it, and it's definitely solving all our problems. Does anybody have a book on this, or can I Google how that works, or... I'm going to go make out with myself in the mirror for a hot second.
But I think you're right, Jess. And I think if you really, and it goes back to you being skeptical of the success rate, you know, however, who knows how that was measured, right? But I guarantee that most, they're hard to do. They are. They're really hard to do, but there's multiple ways of writing them or approaching it. And it's hard to do. And I suspect that there's a lot of people doing it wrong or not. Or not understanding the purpose of it and then going overboard with it, which is just going to bug everybody. You know what I mean? So, you know, and the product people should be responsible or more responsible for these than anybody, I think. Because again, they're supposed to connect to the value, you know, the value proposition. So, but I think most companies probably aren't doing it right, but they've checked, like you said, they checked the box, and that sounds good at a corporate board meeting.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, we're using OKRs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, yeah, OKRs have been great. Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. We sound great. And so that's your question, Brandon, was can it really solve the issues that other metrics can't? Well, are we treating them the same way we've been treating other metrics?
Right.
And I think that's what it comes down to. To me, it's, again, an underlying cultural issue. It's an underlying, like, organizational issue. Are we able to fail at our OKRs and learn something? Are we able to get close to an OKR? And are we able to say, holy crap, we thought we were going towards that OKR. And what the information that we're getting back is we actually don't want to achieve that objective. And sorry, I'm getting all soapboxy, but also, and are we measuring it along the way? Is this actually, are we headed towards the things that we're looking to accomplish? Or are we just charging forward because that's what we said we were doing? And I don't know anybody who goes on a road trip who says our objective is to get to Kansas City. And then you hit, oh, there's going to be 19 miles of construction. But if I take this side road, then I can still hit that objective of getting to Kansas City just in a different, on a different route. Who wouldn't take that route? But I don't know a lot. Sorry. I'm so passionate about, I don't know a lot of companies that don't just go sit in traffic.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I absolutely agree, Jess. And I think The other thing is it becomes a mechanical thing, right? Well, we have the metrics to make decisions. And it's like, this is just one point that you're using to evaluate if you're doing the right thing. It shouldn't be the overall. I mean, in like Doar's book, when they talk about IBM, he's like, everything was based on, I mean, it's like, okay, well, not every company will do that, can do that. Plus, don't forget, Intel's a manufacturing company. So again, it's different than software, which is very, you know, soft. This is the reason it's called software. So it's a different thing than, you know, making chips.
Get the fuck out of here. Is that why it's called software?
It is. I said, somebody was telling developers, I'm like, it's called software. You can do anything. Don't tell me you can't do it. It's soft. It's soft. It's not hardware. It's software. You can do it. Come on, just try it a little harder.
Okay, you said mic drop before. I think that's the mic drop of the episode. Stop. Software.
but it is a good point. I mean, it kind of gets us into like the second part here, like some of the challenges, right, that we see people running into. And I think that is one of them, which is just like Agile, right? Oh, great. This is a great book. Google does it. Silver bullet. We got it. Like, all we have to do is set it up.
OKRs and we're good to go. Just plug it in. Download it. Install it.
put it in, you know, don't just say, hey, this is what we're doing. Measure What Matters has a site. I think it's called whatmatters.com. And they have some examples and so forth of, and they actually have some good videos and stuff like that. But as someone that's kind of trained in this space and so forth, I went through those things and I was like, if this is how I was trying to figure this out, I would fail.
Mm-hmm.
If someone just said, go to that site and figure out how to do it. And I'm not saying they did a bad job. It's not that at all. And I'm not trying to dump on them. It's just,
it goes directly to something Greg said to me right when we were trying to figure out our technical issues when we were starting this, when you couldn't hear us, Brandon, he was like, I really am excited about this topic. And I was like, really? And he goes, yeah. And they're really hard to do well.
Hmm.
But I think it goes back to your point too, Jess, about, and people who are listening to this podcast know about Agile. It's you can explain it in 20 minutes. It doesn't mean you can embed it in a culture. It takes months and months and months to get people to change their behavior. And this is meant to change behavior too, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not that different than Agile, but it takes time and commitment. And if you don't put that in, again, you can explain them. You can read 3 pages and say, oh, okay, I understand what an OKR is, but actually writing them and performing on them, you reporting on them, tracking them in a way that makes sense, that doesn't feel like, oh, if we're not on our OKRs, then we're like Jesse said earlier, we're failing. And there's no, it's like, well, no, you're just a data point, and let's look at it. You know, it's one of the factors that we're having make decisions in the environment we're making decisions in.
Yeah. It is a new skill. I kind of liken it to on the Agile side when you're trying to teach people how to write user stories.
Yeah.
Remember how fun that is?
Yep.
And all of the time and effort we have to put in into that. You heard some of the, when I was doing the kind of the overview, I was like, I say that do the two because it gives mm-hmm. like the direct value back, because that's the same thing we do with user stories, right? Is we're trying to, you know, draw it all back. That's the whole idea, is to draw it back to the actual end user and kind of how, what the benefit really is. And we know that's hard. Like getting people to write good user stories, it's workshop after workshop after iteration after iteration.
Practice.
And I, you know, that's one of the things that I've run into, that to your point, Greg, it's a skill mm-hmm. and it's not a common skill for, as you said, I think that one of the things we can talk about is what we're seeing is where does this lie? Like, where's the level of responsibility of this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it all over the map. Yeah, Jess.
Well, okay, so yes, it's a practice, it's a skill, and I think I want to also touch back on it being a mindset, or like a different way of thinking about mm-hmm. the work that we do and the way that we come together. So I've also seen OKRs treated as, here's what we're doing, and if back to the failure thing, if we're not hitting our OKRs, then we're failing. So we go back to, well, we're 90% to our OKR, and so we're probably good. And we hit it, or if we don't hit it, then are we going to get dinged? Is our department going to be squished? Is my job at risk? Am I at jeopardy? And an objective should be something, to Greg's point, something sort of aspirational.
Yes. Like,
what are we reaching for? Doesn't mean we're going to land on it. It's the dumb, like, if you shoot for the moon, you get a star or whatever. Anyway, gold stars for everyone. But like, how do you make it so it's something that's inspirational, aspirational, we're reaching towards it, we're learning along the way, and we're figuring it out, without it being like, I'm going to put this risky thing out there for my team, for my organization, that we may not hit.
Yeah. And that's a cultural thing.
You're exactly where I'm pointing to is, once again, we're talking about like what percentage of are we at with our OKR, and it kind of turns into the status report thing. And it's once again not safe to fail, because this was our objective. We're not reaching our objective. Well, if it's going to take me you know, 35 hours to get from Minneapolis to Kansas City, I'm going to get a hotel room and stay the night and start again the next day, not drive 35 hours and be like, we made it in 24, I swear. And also it should have taken 7. And like, I'm here and let's have a great time in Kansas City.
Yeah. On barbecue. Right. Yeah. Like, cause that's going to be a successful if you've done, if you just drove it straight through. Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. So that's kind of like, it's there's the writing it, but there's also the underlying cultural, how do we make it okay to not hit them? How do we make it okay to say it was the wrong one? How do we make it okay to pay attention to the impact that it's having on people that are in the process of taking that OKR journey?
Yep. And I guarantee, even though they're a small minority of the team, managers and leaders are the ones that will misuse that data. And they're the ones who will drive the bad behavior because they don't understand what they're trying to do. And they're just worried about their job. And, you know, my wife's working for somebody that's like that right now. It's all about, like, you know, she put a, you know, obscene objectives out to the team and just be like, well, why can't you do that? You know, and then they're like, we're working as hard as we can. And, you know, there's no measurement on it. She just wants to make sure her boss is happy because she got the things done that she committed, not the team. She committed to. Yeah. So I'm getting off on a different subject, but, you know.
So it is, once again, we're talking about how do we have that full view picture, that full roll up, involve everyone, but not in a way that's heavyweight, but that's in lightweight to say, is this achievable? Or is this aspirational? And how do we make both of those things okay? And in what instance do you need either one of those things?
Yeah, and there's a technical way that in the kind of the OKR space that people talk about this, that in my experience and what I'm seeing is that even at Google, they do this where when they started out and were kind of like formulating this and so forth. And by the way, my wife works at Google, so I kind of have a little inside information around, or worked at Google, and I have some inside information kind of like how this kind of evolved over time, is they had, and I think it might even be in Dora's book or somewhere else, I can't remember, but where they have kind of objectives where it's like, okay, we're going to improve the user experience to make sure that they have the, you know, and then, you know, okay, that's a great objective. Yeah, we need that. And then the KRs, you know, are, you know, removing that scale in terms of usability and so forth. But then that's kind of like, okay, that's a goal that makes sense. It aligns to our vision and it's something that we know we need to do. It's maybe not the most inspirational, right? But then they have these ones that they call them stretch objectives, right? So like, you know, we're going to become the space that everyone gets their information, you know, that's kind of the vision of Google, but they take a sub little sub slice of that. And it's like, what's kind of like the, almost like the sub vision of that. And that's kind of becomes your stretch objective at that higher level. We'll talk about hierarchy here in a little bit, but you know, that's at that high one. They're like, we know we need some inspirational ones because if we're going to be kind of those fast change agents, right, within the market, it kind of depends on where you are and where you want to be in a transformational journey. Right? I keep looking over here because it's my competing values framework thing that's on my whiteboard. And it's, you know, collaborate, create, compete, and control. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of those different vectors and, you know, those that are really high on the external focus and differentiation and flexibility, adaptiveness, that's Google. They're in that top right corner. Like they're trying to just interrupt the market left and right. But that's not the companies we're dealing with day to day, right? They're going to fall somewhere else in those three quadrants. And so for them, from a cultural standpoint, they know that they have to kind of, from an IT perspective, part of this is, A, let's get more connected to what the overall vision of the organization is and kind of the business and getting that alignment we talked about in the last podcast, right? There's some value there, but there's some, we talked about in the last part, the cultural divide in those spaces is pretty heavy, right? And so I find in my experience, that's the biggest chipping away point is like, okay, you know, I'm just going to translate my KPIs into KRs. No, very different things. Mm-hmm. Very, very different things. KPIs are kind of like operation O&M, right? You're staying in a band for KPIs, right? We're trying to stay to make sure that we're, you know, we're nothing's going wrong. Where OKRs are kind of the shift over to say, no, how in business language, how are we meeting what we're trying to achieve? And to Jesse said, to the point, all the way through the teams, they're able to say, oh, what I'm doing is tied to that. But the other challenge I see is the measurement thing, which, but I'll get to that in a second. I'm just kind of curious. I think you guys have reactions to what I wanted to say, what I just said.
I was totally just thinking like, okay, but also the measurement part.
Yeah. Yeah.
You nailed it. Okay.
Yeah.
Greg, go.
Yeah. And the measurement part, there's a lot of different, there's a lot of different variations of that. I think the way the Google one they use is they use like a 0.1 to 1 scale on their key results. Am I remembering that correctly? No, it's objectives kind of, but, and I think they actually maybe do it subset to the key results too. I apologize, Google, if I'm misstating this, but I've seen other people outside of Google do this, but they basically do it where it's like a 0.1 to 1 for the objective, and they're grading kind of similar to us on a kind of completion scale. Is like, if it's like 0.8, they haven't maybe not fully met it because maybe they had some aggressive key results that they were trying to do. If it's like 0.7, 0.8, they did pretty well, right? So there is like a gradation in there rather than a binary, like we hit the objective or we didn't, right? Because the key results are meant to be so
aggressive.
Yeah, they're meant to be not binary, right? They're meant to say we're shifting the needle, is the way that I like to describe it. You know, we're going from this to this is like my favorite sort of key result. We're going from, hey, we're at 10%. We want to be at 50%. Or in the other way, we don't want to do this. So we want to go lower than what we are now. Like, those are the best key results. You can't write them all that way, but those are the ones.
We are moving the needle. And here's what we're learning about the fact that we're moving the needle.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that the other piece of that is, I've seen it where they've actually really spent the time trying to be good at writing the OKRs and get, you know, and really iterate on it and so forth. And then they don't hit it. And what do you do with that? And I've seen it where like we don't hit it and they've been like, we may not be organized the right way. Going back to our last conversation, you know, we may be, the things we're trying to do, we're too disaggregated to really try and be able to do this holistically, right? So there is some information that I've also seen it where they don't hit it and they're like, oh, maybe I didn't write it right, right? Maybe I need to rewrite that, whatever that was.
Or I liked your example better though, is that maybe we're not organized correctly to be able to hit that. Like, what are the learnings that you're getting from this? Is, okay, well, we thought we can't do this in the way that we're organized currently. Is it important enough to reorganize ourselves in a way that's going to allow us to hit these objectives that we've already deemed are really important?
Yeah.
But we've, because of our organizational architecture, we're hoped.
But you know what? But the thing, back to your point, Brandon, is I think that for me, again, it was just like with Agile, it was the focus on the execution of Agile.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about looking at the business and why they were, we can make awesome teams that will produce so much and they're just like so efficient, organized, they write great user stories, but then it doesn't mean that what they're doing adds up to value in the market, right? And what the company's trying to do. So I think people, I think that maybe you have more experience with this than I do, but that may be one gap that OKRs have, is that the analysis around it isn't strong enough yet or sophisticated enough yet to actually, and I don't know, you know more about it than I do, but
yeah, I mean, there are things now called OKR coaches that exist.
Of course.
This is a thing where, similar to our experience in the last 20 plus years, right? It's becoming, I think it's gone beyond, yes, the Google success really kind of really opened everyone's eyes of like, you know, what's the secret sauce? And they opened the door a little bit for people to see, and Dorr wrote the book, right? In terms of providing that. And it's not just about Google. It's about a bunch of other companies and people that, you know, he's consulted on that. People kind of see it and they're kind of like, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is that I think almost for across the board, it makes sense. People are like, okay, yeah, this is, you know, this is not advanced common sense, Greg. This is like, just, this is common sense. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, yeah, we're going to express things in a way that aligns to what we're actually trying to achieve as a business. And we're able to actually measure it in a way in terms of what we're delivering from a technology standpoint. That's been a huge barrier, right? In terms of, because we've just been like, we've been outputting. We're getting really good at, we're getting better at delivery. We're becoming more efficient. We're leaning out. We're getting rid of all the fat. Like, we're really, really getting good. And yet, we don't seem to be moving the needle from a business perspective.
Yeah, well, and this is why you saw that evolution in agile consulting when they started to realize, oh my God, we're making highly productive teams or hyper productive teams, but we're still not getting there. Oh, now we're going to business agility, which was just a way for them to say we didn't think about the business. We just thought about the way the teams were structured and what the output was. And so that you saw that show, I don't know how successful it is, because it's agilist trying to do the business. And I'm not sure how well that's been going, but you know, you hear the word a lot anyway.
Yeah. 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 And you know, I'm kind of curious, Jess, from, you know, now your experience at a product company, you know, in terms of the hyper focus on the end consumer, you know, and kind of thinking about the different ways you're evaluating the value that you're creating and so forth. Is this, you know, you obviously have some experience with it, you know, before then and now, kind of, are you seeing it like day to day, or is it kind of, you know, something that's just kind of like a fad, or, you know, just the high schoolers just talking about it?
Yes, it's just a bunch of high schoolers going, I want to do whatever everybody else is doing. No, the more we talk about it, the more I'm less surprised. Brilliant, Jessica. The less surprised I am about why people think it's done really good things for their organization or made a positive impact on their organization. Because when there is that level of alignment and you have the data, the information where you're actually up front prior to writing the OKR, finding out, like doing the discovery that says, where should we be heading in the marketplace? And we think our objective should be over here, backed by information, backed by discovery, backed by data, backed by research, all of that really interesting things that we do for market fit, and then say, okay, our objective is to hit the market right about there.
Yeah.
I think that's really valuable. And collectively, there's a group of humans that go, okay, let's work on hitting the market right about there, because here's the impact that it's going to have on the market, which is our bottom line, but also the impact we're going to have on our customers. And we're going to understand, like, holy cow, this, we're making lives easier for people who are doing XYZ thing. That's awesome. I can definitely get behind that. And definitely as someone who's a user of product, I can certainly get behind that because I want it to be easier. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm part of my own OKR, and I can definitely get behind that too. All of that, very, very valid. I think I still struggle with the ability to have organizations that are comfortable with getting close, with failing, with realizing it wasn't the right objective.
It's
just for me, it's the underlying culture bit that we need to be okay with saying we got it wrong, pivot, or we really tried our best and we got pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting. Like the stretch goals are interesting in terms of, I think Google also had like that Project X where they were like, go as far as down the line you can in terms of what we're trying to create. And then if you figure out, hey, we can't get past this unless major changes happen, we're going to reward you with like 2 weeks of vacation, right? Like it's,
we absolutely shouldn't be doing. Here you go.
You just saved us like a year and a half worth of R&D on something, you know, but it's to your point, like that's a technology firm. So like, and I don't mean to be that as like the standard that the organizations, particularly that I'm dealing with, that are highly regulated and very, very cautious about any sort of move. I will say this though, in those orgs, OKRs, again, because it just seems to make common sense versus advanced common sense, people are like, okay, let's mess with this. Let's get into this. It may be a little mucky. And I think it's kind of very similar to Agile, right? Where it was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, where they're kind of like, hey, we know that we see it. We see the data. It makes sense that instead of just doing this long stage gate thing that we all hate and we never hit the iron triangle of all the stuff we're supposed to do, it makes sense to try to deliver things more regularly, right? We understand it's going to take a cultural change. But I will say this, OKRs is less, in my mind.
Yeah.
It's less of a big mindset shift, right? Than
it
Agile.
Brings the business closer. It brings it. It
yeah. You're kind of like, okay, I could see that. I can see the language. I think we've kind of hit on it, and Jesse really kind of hitting on this really well, which is, well, what do we do with it? You know, we set it up. Well, now what? Now what do we do with it? A, we probably need to get better at writing them. That's my experience. A. B, you know, do we have the baseline things to create the key results that we're trying to do? That's the thing. That's kind of an interesting problem statement that I run into a lot, where it seems like, oh, yeah, we'll just create key results. We're moving from this to this. Well, we may not even be measuring that right now because we're going from KPIs, again, which is in a band. We may have some of those, but we don't have a lot of them. Right. Like, how do you measure user satisfaction? Right. I mean, Greg, I go to you, like, you know, this from a product side. And we talked about we're really behind in the Agile space from a product perspective. But a lot of the enterprise, like large companies, surprisingly, from at least the technology side, they don't know how to measure that.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's true. And I think that's where I have hope for something like an OKR, is that a tool that'll help connect the you know, the people doing the work, the most important people who do the work, to what the business outcome is supposed to be. Because the whole reason you exist, even if you're in a nonprofit, is to provide value. So if you can't align to that, and again, if that's the responsibility of the product team and the leadership team, to understand what is the market, what problems are we trying to solve, what's adding value. And if that's unknown and not disciplined, it doesn't matter what you do, because you're going to fail as an organization because you try to do too much, whatever. There's a million reasons why companies go sour. But I think having a connected business, and it's harder, the bigger you get, the harder it is, because that's when those posters go up, Jess, you know, and that, because the bigger company is, when you're in a startup, this is easy. This is like, we can't get a deal. What are we
doing? They're right there. I can almost touch them.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's easy. And Agile is easy in startups too, because there's five people. You know, but you get a company with 20,000 people, it's a little hard. It's a lot harder to do that, you know?
Yeah. Which brings me to the last part in terms of what we're seeing. And this is, and you've kind of alluded to it and talked about a little bit, but, Door and Intel and kind of what they did at Google and have tried to copy to other companies is kind of that hierarchical struggle. Hierarchical structure / struggle of OKRs, right? Where like you literally from the C-suite, you get the vision, but like right below that, like L1s, like they're supposed to be creating objectives and then having key results underneath that. Now it's interesting, could we get into who owns that, who actually is writing them? I think it differs from company to company based off of who's willing to actually put in the work, right? And I think you get it, even if you're across the L1s, you got some, they're like, I'm all over this, I'm into it, I get it. And other ones are like, that's just another thing I want to do. And either I'm corporate drafting, you know, Greg, where I'm just kind of like, I just stay behind my team to make sure I keep going forward. And so, you know, you get into some of those things like who owns it and who's actually supposed to be the owner of writing it. who's supposed to be the owner of measuring the key results and so forth. But the general concept is, at the highest level of the L1s, you have an objectives, and then they create the key results. And from those key results, kind of the next level down is basically saying, from a kind of like that middle management, it's like, okay, for each of those key results, I should have some sort of objective related to that key result. And then I then create key results for the teams to then hit. And then the teams, the individual members of the teams, have their own objectives that are meant to align to the key results that we're trying to hit for each of those objectives. So that at a very, very basic level, that's the concept, right?
But how complicated, what you just described is really complicated to connect all those things.
I thought it was perfectly clear.
I mean, it's clear. It's just hard to do because
an entire company that just writes OKRs. Okay, you write yours, and then I'll write mine, and then you'll write yours, and then yours, and then I'll come back and write mine again, and then we'll write
yours. We'll get into the solutioning where there are some things that are kind of interesting that are coming forward on that. But I think for me, the most interesting part of it is it's twofold. One, what's your RACI chart for that? Like who's responsible? Who's accountable? That's number one, actually threefold. Two, who's tracking the measurements, and how much are you doing that through your actual workflow tools that you already have? Things are becoming more and more integrated to be able to do that. Some tools are better than others, I will tell you. Right. And then three, there's the HR perspective of this. Right. When you get down to the individual level, that's basically how they're setting their goals.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yep.
And in some ways it's great because, hey, there's transparency. I'm not just kind of like doing a bunch of word salad, just kind of like, oh, I think I want to do this in the next year. Like, it actually helps in some ways. It creates clarity. This is what I'm supposed to be like aligning towards, and this is how I'm supposed to be contributing. But it's also very it feels very tight, mm-hmm. doesn't it? I can see Jess's face. I saw her. She's like, my people's side is feeling a little uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like innovation is going to happen every day in that kind
of Right. Right. So, Jess, I'm kind of curious, like from that last piece of like the people part of it, what's kind of your immediate reaction to that part of it?
I think that part is like, it's almost like how far and wide are your OKRs and what are the squishy parts in between, if that makes sense. Yep. Like, are we OKRing our organization to the nines? Like, are we OKRing our company to death? Every single thing you do has to align to an OKR. Art and science. Right. Or does none of my work align to an OKR? And then I don't feel like I am helping the company accomplish the vision or mission.
Well, our objectives taking over the vision posters.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, HR, and I'm a fan of HR, most of the time, you know, they have to measure things too. They have to set up the you know, what are the raises going to be? What are the increases? What are the promotions? So if it's being fed by erroneous data, which it could be misused, right? I mean, anything could be misused. That's not just an OKR thing, but I can just see that'd be one that could be one out. And I'm happy you brought that HR part up, Brandon, because that's critical.
Yeah. And I think my wife who's, you know, HR consultant, she would say the same thing. It's like it goes back and forth. There's benefits in terms of there's more transparency, you have something you can guide towards, you know, so forth and so on. But what if my path of what I want doesn't necessarily exactly align with what my key results for my team are, right?
Mm-hmm. What if you have this brilliant idea?
Yeah.
It's sort of this like weird one-off.
That, are you
like,
squeezing the innovation? Are you squeezing the kind of decision-making around, you know, creative decision-making, right? Yep. Around things. Yeah.
Yeah. And how do you have make it enough so that people feel aligned, but not so heavy that quite literally every single thing I do must align to an OKR in like, because, well, first of all, that would also mean the amount of overhead in writing OKRs for a large organization would replace business analysts.
Yeah.
if writers in a whole nother job, which is great. Everybody needs jobs. Like, come on. Now you're just overheading for overhead for overhead's sake and not just allowing an organization to operate in ways that make sense.
Yeah. I'll say in practical terms, where I'm seeing it actually being applied is the team of teams level. So whether you call it a group or a train or whatever you want to call it, right? I'm seeing that basically you have a value stream that has several different teams of teams. And those folks are the ones that are saying, okay, for the value stream, we may have a vision and mission for that value stream. And then at that team of team level, they create objectives. And then for the delivery of those objectives, it's the team is kind of responsible for hitting those objectives, but it's not an individual level. They don't go quite that. So they're kind of in that, they sit in that middle band, if that makes sense. And that's kind of where you start to propagate this concept and you start to see the value. And then it's up to the organization to say, well, particularly in conjunction with HR, Greg, like you're like, are we ready to go to the individual level? Do we need to go higher up to like the C-suite? Like it's kind of, you know, we're sitting in the middle and we're seeing the value and we go up or down. And that's where I see it kind of really jiving the best, because that's where you're probably getting the value the most in terms of you still have the teams that are like, oh gosh, I see at least within my larger org, I'm hitting that vision of the value stream that I'm in by hitting the objective that's at that team and team level.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the other thing about that is when you talk about teams of teams, it is good to have some measure about how even that's working, right? And controlling that is, you know, it's a difficult thing, especially if it's a big organization. So,
I mean, great. That's where I ran into the red, yellow, green. It was like team with team level.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that was just kind of like, that's useless, except for the C-suite person who's like, oh, I look through that every weekend. You know, mm-hmm. Greg had a very valid point. He shouldn't be kicked off the project for that. He had a very valid point. But I want to kind of start to wrap up here in terms of, you know, you started to get into it, Jess, with like, let's not go too wide, but kind of what are some of the things that, you know, would work to make it better? I hate to be the ultra consultant. So it's now the consultant answer is two things. It can be, it depends, or AI.
My God. I didn't even think about that.
Those are our two answers right now. It depends or AI.
Right? Yeah.
And don't get us started on AI.
But I will say this about AI in this space. I did a whole workshop with a large organization, and it was like, it was middle management, so like CIO to their L2 or L1s, and they each had their area, their value stream basically. And there's like six of them, and they had kind of a strategy for where they wanted to go. And I kind of got a slide for each of them. And I was like, okay, I want to do an OKR workshop with them. And typically I would go through, here's what, kind of what we've gone through in this podcast, right? I would do that. And I was like, okay, let's write OKRs together. And we'd all go through that same hard, sort of difficult thing of either writing features or epics or stories. It's like, oh, how do I do that with a group of all, like seven of them, mm-hmm. in a workshop to go through it? And I was like, well, we have this little AI chat GPT sort of thing. Let's see what they come up with based off the strategy stuff I'm seeing. Like, let's see how they write this. And I'll tell you, in my standards and how I would coach it, it's about 70-75% there. It was not bad, right? In terms of how you would say, you know, this is what I'm trying to achieve. Can you write it as an OKR? I was like, 75%, that's a little bit of tweaking here or there. The two part for me, like the, you know, the action plus the work, you know, and then also the KRs being a little less binary. You know, the ChatGPT kind of did a little binary kind of a key results piece. But it's not even just like the guidance, but AI is actually really interesting, because we talked about how it's the progress. Like if we set a scale from point one to one or use one of those sort of things, AI is starting to get into that space, right? And this is the most interesting one, kind of the predictive analysis of based off past, you know, success or failures.
Yeah, like, the patterns, you know, yeah.
Yeah, the patterns. They're able to kind of see the patterns and kind of streamlining some of that process. So this is one of the places where I'm kind of like, I can kind of see it. I can kind of see the value here from an AI perspective, but it depends.
And you have to have, and, but it depends. Excellent.
Yes, excellent and.
Principle of the consultant playbook.
Yeah.
And you do need to have human on paying it. Like you can't just have AI. That's the hard part, right? That I think is people just go, oh, well, AI, send it out.
And sometimes, you know, and sometimes value, you know, I'm not, and again, I have a lot of opinions about AI, but sometimes understanding value is a human thing. It's not so methodology, you know, it's like, it's not just technical. It's like, did you go to your customer? Did you hear your customer? Did you listen? Did you hear what their pain points were? Did you realize that their pain points really just the thing that bugged them last week, but that's really not what they're trying to do. They're trying to do that. Like it's a sophisticated human interaction to find value in a lot of times, at least in my experience, that's been always the most valuable, is to go in here and listen and sit with them and look at them in the face and have the conversation and then have an ongoing conversation. But you know, AI can't solve that problem. I mean,
but the interesting thing about OKR stuff too, that you brought up something, is like sitting there, going there and seeing their desk, that's not our world anymore.
No, but you can, even if you did it over video chat.
I understand, but some of the companies have started to figure out the OKR thing. They've started to kind of think about how you account for remote and hybrid work environments. So this kind of goes into your space, Jess, in terms of kind of, you know, the things that your company is trying to get to, right?
Yeah.
And it includes like setting goals that are achievable regardless of physical location.
So, Jessica, I think we've realized that Brandon is thoroughly a cyborg at this point. Totally bought into AI, cyborg.
This is not AI. No. I'm talking about just OKRs. So part about the remote thing is not about AI. It's about OKRs. So that was another kind of thing that I'm kind of interested, you know, in terms of next. What I'm kind of seeing is it provides something, kind of a crutch. Of we're now very remote, whereas maybe we had a little bit more of that human connectivity being in the similar space some of that understanding, whether we knew it or not. Whereas this provides some of that kind of transparency and understanding of, you know, you're not walking by the poster, whether you look at it or not, right? Some people may, but that doesn't happen anymore.
No, yeah, you need to have that in a way that's virtually consumable as well.
Yep.
I mean, you have to. Honestly, we had to before we all started talking about quote unquote remote work, because we were working globally. Me in North America could walk by the vision, mission, OKR statements all day, every day. But are they doing that in the Philippines or in Argentina? Probably not. And so then how is that? What we're looking for is the connective tissue, right? And so how do you maintain that connective tissue? A lot of what we talked about today is like, yeah, there are definitely great practices for writing them and for measuring and for all the things. But the underlying is like, what's that connective tissue that's gonna actually make these operational and effective and, God forbid, fun? And like inspiring, like how does all of those things happen that create the really interesting, juicy, cool shit that we get to consume day in and day out? That you have to have that kind of connective tissue. We actually missed out on before the pandemic holistically. And how do we solve for that? Not just for those of us who live in the same country, but
well,
because we're global. You say what I said was overblown, which I think is actually a really great point. Right? Yeah.
Well, but I would say this is simplistic, but people solve problems, not processes or technology or tools. And at the end of the day, you'll never get away from that. I mean, and all the tools and the technology, I'm of course for it. I'm not against it, but I still think people are hard to read. People are hard to, it's a complex thing to have a relationship and give that emotional energy to have that relationship. And that's not something you can figure out in an algorithm. It's about watching how many times somebody blinks or they move their body. You know, it's like there's so many nuanced things that you get a true sense of how people feel when you interact with them, even over video or whatever. So I that's an off topic thing, but I'm with you on that.
Yeah. So I'm trying to, you know, in terms of our next podcast, I'm kind of going between getting into the flow topic in terms of getting people into individual flow and team flow and kind of building off of this in terms of how things are changing. But I also see, Greg, from your standpoint of, you know, how do we adjust in terms of, you know, we're remote. We kind of had the remote, you know, we're coming back to work. You know, we had that podcast. But I think it'd be something to be interesting to reflect on again, because we kind of have some people are required to come back for a certain amount of time. And what does that mean? And all of that kind of stuff. So a lot of good stuff to reflect on going mm-hmm. forward. But to kind of close the loop on this topic on objectives and key results, OKRs, they're so slap, as Greg likes to say again.
I don't even know what that means.
I know you don't.
Fist bump.
Exploding fist bump. Yeah. but I think, you know, what I heard today, and I would love to kind of try to wrap it in my mind and then hear your guys' thoughts on this, which is there's value here. There's definitely value here from, you know, creating transparency. We're figuring out how to move the needle. We're using business language, again, kind of building off our last podcast in terms of helping the people that are like really the decision makers on how to deliver something in a digital company. They have a very clear view on what that is, how it's affecting what they're doing. And we're able to measure it in a way that hopefully we're able to say, yeah, this is going great. You know, this is, you know, we feel like we're making progress in the right direction, or we're not. And if we're not, what is the decision around that? What, you know, is it that, hey, you know, we're too disaggregated and we need to kind of come together more? Is it that, wow, we don't have the technology to actually achieve this, or we don't have the skill sets to achieve this and we identify some gaps, or hey, we need to get a little bit better at writing our OKRs. And that's a skill that, you know, mm-hmm. we need to get better at. And yep. there are some tools and things coming along the way that will help us try to get better at that. And, you know, there are OKR coaches now, and there's, you know, there's a lot of things in terms of tooling that needs to improve, but overall it's a positive. And I think that, but we also aren't all Google, right? So, you know, we have to understand from a cultural standpoint mm-hmm. how this would actually fit in. For the rest of you, kind of build off of that.
Well, I think it's just like, again, going back to the Agile, the people who were dogmatic about Agile and didn't say, look at the team, understand the team, listen to the team, adjust where you need to. Instead of just going and go, no, this is how you have to do it. And if you don't do it, well, it's not my fault. You know, I'm just walking off. Instead of making a commitment as a coach to them, you know, just being dogmatic about some theory or methodology or whatever is, it's not the answer to all the problems. So it has to be monitored and it has to be adjusted, you know, and OKRs are they're flexible, I guess, in a lot of ways, yeah. But I think that you have to take that into consideration and not just be like, this is how we're going to do the OKR, because this is the way the article I read or whatever, or John Doerr told us to do it this way.
Yeah.
And you got to go in and, again, expend the emotional energy to understand the team and understand what's going to work for them, you know, I think, and adjust to that.
I will build on exactly what you said, sort of just like understanding them, getting to know the team or the organization or the department or whatever it is, And then don't overthink it.
Yeah. Mm.
Try it. Learn from it. See what's working, what isn't. Try it again. You're going to get it wrong the first time. I promise you that. But don't stick with what you got wrong. Learn from it. Try again. Try it in a different way. It is not a recipe by the book. It's a recipe to try to figure out.
Right.
Love it. Any ad hoc ad buys that we know of? Like the Magic 8-Ball was, by the way, the most successful thing was like a Google short like video is like by far the most traffic we've got was about the Magic 8-Ball.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh my God.
An ad hoc ad for OKRs.
Yeah.
That one, Greg?
Well, any of these new firms that are having OKR coaching, which is probably tied to a certification program, which is going to make them money, we'll have to find out who those people are and, you know, capital, beg them.
Okay, lowercase r.
Lowercase r.
Lowercase results, but we've got our initiatives and our keys.
I think, Jess, you start with a capital O when you get the first certification, then you're like, lowercase r. K, little case R. And then like you get uppercase K. It's like, okay. R. All right. Well, thanks guys for getting together once again. As usual, please visit us at Agile After Dark on YouTube. Find us on any of the places that you get podcasts, whether it be Spotify or Apple. And if you have any feedback, please send it to feedback at Agile After Dark. Agile After Dark. Not new ways of working after dark.com. But great time to you again, guys, and look forward to the next one.
See you soon.